All right. For the record, please state your name and how you define your religion or path.
Milton Notes. I'm an eclectic pagan. Wiccan would be a good way to define it. American witch would be another way to define that.
And are you generally okay with the term witch?
Yes.
How do you see the relationship of your beliefs with witchcraft and magic?
That's transformed over the years for me. I was brought into paganism through something called the Midwest Men's Festival, which is a big event that's held every July in Kansas. And I was either agnostic or atheist at that point. And then during this event, they held two large rituals, and I was really questioning at this time. But the one that was most significant to me is they held what was called a full moon ritual. And we went out to the pond, and we basically, most of us were undressed, and we engaged in a ritual. And I was amazed at that time, and the transformative power of just being with different men who were celebrating a type of spirituality that I had never been exposed to in my entire life. And I walked away from that feeling very empowered, but still questioning just as to what that meant, because they were talking about magic, and the experience was magical in the colloquial sense, but like nothing like magical happened. I mean, and it was transformative. So I'm still struggling with what people mean by the term magic and what they mean by spell casting. I know when I engage in a ritual that it's a transformative, uplifting experience for me, and it can be cathartic too, because some of the rituals I've been in have dealt with grieving and loss. So it's certainly important to me to connect, and up to that point I wasn't connecting with anything. And then during that particular event, it's kind of funny, but they had something which was almost totally make-believe. They had something called the Queer God Ritual. So we went up to this place called Sunset Ridge or Sunrise Ridge, I don't remember exactly, and they took us through a guided imagery and stuff, and then after that people started dancing and drumming, and the facilitator or priest if you want to be, and then again I was with a group of men who were transformed by that experience, and it was uplifting, and it was in the middle of the night, and I must have been up for hours just dancing and doing rituals, and doing the ritual and just not even really communicating in the traditional sense, just being in the presence of other people who were celebrating their spirituality and their sexuality, and it was amazing, and I connected with that, and then that started, that was like in 1992, and it started my path definitely into what is commonly called witchcraft. And people have all sorts of misconceptions about what witchcraft is, but for me, I certainly bought into that I can be who I want to be, I can celebrate the season, I can find a power outside of myself, and in ways that can heal me that I never expected. I mean, it really transformed me and helped me deal with fundamental issues. And I don't really consider myself reaching out to any deity, just something greater than myself. And it's ultimately helped me a lot with other parts of my life.
Mm-hmm. How would you describe your general beliefs? What is the defining characteristic for you?
The defining characteristic for me and my current way of believing is that I make sure that I pay attention to the eight major Sabbaths, that I pay attention to the concept of the wheel turning, and that I at least once every couple of months take time and just be present during one of those Sabbaths to realize that life is changing and growing and things are happening. And for me, those are the defining moments in my life, is to be connected to those moments in time. I won't say I'm so good outside of that. I mean, people have whole sorts about recycling and eating vegan and saving the planet. I'm not that pagan, but I am about realizing that we live on a planet and that planet has finite resources, and I need to tap into that. And if I don't take time to pause and listen to what's happening, the time just flies. I lose all continuity. I mean, I can go on and look back in 10 years. I won't even. But since I've been doing this, I take those 8 moments, those 8 seasons, and listen to where I'm at in my life. And each one has a corresponding meaning to me, but we'll probably get into that later.
You're good.
All right. Are there particular gods or goddesses you worship?
Not in particular. I right now I'm currently practicing with groups who like to have deities involved, but mine is more fluid than that. I think it's about reaching out. I don't want to sound like Star Trek or something or Star Wars, but I want to reach out to the life force around me, and I think there's constructive things about that and destructive things. And either one of those can be used in a manner that can be helpful. But so during a traditional ritual, there's usually a god or a goddess invoked, but I do that more out of respect or convenience for the participants than for my own personal belief. So,
is there a name to this energy? Something bigger source that you can call upon, or is it just present?
I mean, the traditional term that I would, that has been used a lot, and people misunderstand it, is karma. But karma is just not the rule of reciprocity. Karma is the rule of hospitality. Well, there's whole stuff about karma, but there's a rule of hospitality, there's the belief of responsibility, there's the, so karma would be like one, but when I say that, again, people tend to want to go to the colloquial meaning of that, where all they think about is the philosophy or belief of reciprocity, and karma is so much greater than that. And so there's really no term that really fits. I don't want to steal from any particular belief system that's not appropriate, but the closest that comes to that other than karma would be the Great Spirit. But I don't want to appropriate that because it doesn't. I'm not Native American, but that's certainly... frames how I think. If you actually talk about the medicine wheel and the Red Rotor recovery, and then being, I've done Native American sweats and invoking or being asking the Great Spirit to be present. And what's different about that? It's not a living being per se. It's there to help and guide you and to draw upon its strength and sometimes to teach you lessons if you need be. But it's very similar to karma in that it's not there to hurt you or to harm you. It's just there to provide a framework in which to live one's life.
And do you believe in and seek assistance from other supernatural beings?
If I was to seek assistance or power from anything, it would be from the elemental energies. And there's different cultures with that, but I basically latch on to air, fire, water, earth. And I do pull energy and power from them. And I even combine those at different times. So for people, what I would say is I latch on to the elemental forces of life.
And what are your beliefs about the afterlife?
I go back and forth on this a lot. So my current belief right now is if I die, I die. There's no afterlife at this point. I truly don't believe in that. Ask me on another day, it might be different. But my current belief is that this is the fundamental principle of why I practice the practice, that we need to use that limited time we have here on Earth to be a positive force and to connect with other people and to grow the collective conscience in a positive way so we can evolve as a race and hopefully become better than we are today. And the only thing that's left of me is what I have contributed to that collective conscience. And I do live my life, and the jobs I have selected, almost my entire life has been trying to add to that collective conscience, or that way of improving humanity. And I've spent a lot of time professionally volunteering through advocacy to create that, and it's one of those pillars of my spirituality, is that we need to leave this place better than we left it. Humanity needs to grow and change and adapt, or we're going to destroy ourselves. And we're in that crisis right now. I know there's chaos magic, and out of chaos, good things can happen, but it feels like we're just in this place of chaos, and we need an organizing force to come in and to bring some harmony. And if we don't do that, we're going to rip ourselves apart. And my spirituality and what my practice is and what I do with, like even through Pagans in the Park, is to bring some organization to that chaos so that we can be better people.
And do you consider your beliefs to be a religion or more of a spiritual practice?
It's definitely a spiritual practice. When I think of religion, I think of very orthodox, biblical texts that are written, and my spirituality does not fit in that box at all. It's not a religion at all. One of the things is I talk to people about there's religion and there's spirituality, and religion's about rules and structure and orthodox and dogma. A spirituality is about that moral compass. It's about becoming better than you are, connecting with people in a positive way. And even though religion may add that structure, but spirituality is ultimately that action, that how you're going to interact with people, how you're going to leave the place. And when people use religion, they get caught in this box, and like they distort that. I mean, we're in a crisis right now in this nation on how we're going to handle immigrants. And the way we're doing that is by holding them in detention camps. And somehow people who practice Christianity are distorting that text to say, oh, this is okay. And I'm familiar enough with the Christian doctrine to say, this isn't ever what the Bible intended, especially in the New Testament. People are going to have to step outside of that orthodoxy. They're going to have to go back to their roots. They're going to have to find that moral compass. And right now, I don't think religion is providing that for a lot of people. I think it's being used as a weapon to hurt. And I'm saddened by that. It's like just using this dogma. And it can, and I can say for Christianity, for Muslims, even for Hindus who battle with Muslims in the streets of India. I mean, it's like you got to figure this out. I mean, we're not going to be around much longer. You got to stop, and that's religion for me. It's like even when you talk about the Crusades, it's like there's the Muslim beliefs, the Christian beliefs, and here are these seven Crusades in which people were killing each other because they couldn't get out of their religion, their orthodoxy, and they would say that they're very spiritual people, and I'm going like, that does not ring spirituality to me. That you're trying to protect a belief that's failing. And there's this there's a piece of psychology where the more energy you put into something, the harder it is to change your belief system. So it's like if you have Christianity as or any religion as a as a framework to work, and you put all this energy into it, and you, and someone comes up to you and saying, I don't think this is working. Once people are embedded in that, it's very hard. So the more energy you put into something, the harder it is to change people's beliefs. Spirituality, I think, is more fluid and flexible. Like I could say, well, today I don't believe in an afterlife, and tomorrow maybe I do. That's spirituality.
So for you, is spirituality more like a practice than a belief?
Action,
yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think it's important for people to recognize paganism as a religion in order to get, like, government recognition and...
I think that there's been a lot of real positive work with getting especially soldiers, the military, to recognize that people are practicing paganism. But if you went to those very soldiers, they would each have a very different belief about what it was. But yes, because then the way in which they want their bodies to be interred, they can put symbols on the they can put symbols now on the headstones. They can actually file, if you want to be a conscientious objector, you can actually go, I'm practicing this form of paganism, and due to my beliefs, I can harm no one. And a pagan didn't used to have that availability. I mean, because nobody recognized, but now I can literally talk to somebody, teach them how to write a conscientious objector form, and say, I'm a practicing pagan. And that, because of the Supreme Court, but the Supreme Court decisions recently recognizing that this has to be held, recognized by the military, is important. Or it even goes into such as a lot of pagans get hand-fasted rather than traditionally married. So then that leads to recognizing marriage benefits. Yeah. And so if you want to play semantics, whether spirituality or religion, again, that structure, that orthodoxy, allows other people to wrap their mind around something. But, and it does provide a framework for people to get benefits, to be recognized, to gain some strength, but it's a double-edged sword. I do believe that if I've been involved or been near or associated with some people who were practicing and they became very rigid in their beliefs, and like the Dionysic cults, for example, nothing wrong with it, but some go to extreme to where men are completely excluded. When you get to that extreme again, you become religion, you become dogma, and you start hurting yourself when you start excluding people like that.
Yes and no.
How active would you say you are in terms of religious spiritual practice?
Not very much, I guess. My biggest thing is, in the last year, for a lot of personal reasons, I reawakened something that was here in Topeka that had existed for a long period of time, and for whatever reason it kept falling apart, and it's called Pagans in the Park. It's kind of gone under Sophia's Garden, it's gone over the Lavender Circle, it's kind of taken different forms throughout the years, and I've been a mainstay in getting that group of people, or those people who are interested into celebrating at least the equinoxes and the vernal equinoxes and the solstices, and so about once a month I put a lot of energy into it, and then it goes away for a couple of months. So I'm not that active. I'm not as active as other people would be, but I kind of have become one of the two or three people who have become the faces of Pagans in the Park, so, and that's been really successful. A long time ago, I stopped going to Midwest Men's Festival for a lot of reasons, so I kind of fell out of that group. And then the I won't say it's a group, but the group that I was practicing with most, which was the Web of Oz, the numbers kept dwindling, and I think, again, they caught up in their own orthodoxy, and they couldn't find new people, and I kept on making suggestions about, well, if you do this, and they kept, and I basically, as far as I was concerned, they kept getting shot down, and finally I said, for a lot of different reasons, I'm not talking about all of them right here, but I said, this group's dying, and I'm going to try to reawaken, and this is a process, not pagans in the park, and so far, knock on wood, wishes well, cast great spells, we're being very successful at doing that, but there's no guarantee. Pagans are kind of their own people, and then they're interested in something for 1 minute, and then they're interested in something else. So yeah. Right now, I think I'm a force for that, a positive force for that. So.
How long have you been involved with Pagans in the Park?
In its various forms since 1992.
92? Wow.
But like I said, it's been Sophia's Garden, it's been Pagan Pride, it's been the Lavender Circle, has been Pagans in the Park. It hasn't. We always go back to Pagans in the Park. I don't know. And if you look on Google or something like that, there's a lot of groups that call themselves Pagans in the Park throughout the United States, mm-hmm. and they're none of them are associated with each other that I know of. But it's just the thing that we keep going back. But it was like once I came back from 1992 Midwest Men's Festival, I started looking for a way to bring that into my life. So I don't know, the first time that we did Sophia's Garden, I know we have done two Pagan Prides, and then we used to do, Bert used to do the Lavender Circle out at Shawnee's Lake, so probably right around 92.
And had the group been in existence before that?
Well, I was fairly young, so I don't know what we'll be them. I mean, I was in my 30s in there. I'm 60. I was probably 28 or something like that at the time. I'm trying to figure out the math. So I don't know whether it existed or not. I mean, I got involved with, I know that Sophia's Garden was existed, and I know that Bert owned a alchemy shop, and that he did this thing, and then I became aware of Pagan Pride, and so, I mean, so to the best of my knowledge, I got involved in 1992, so, I mean.
And how do you see your beliefs play out in your daily life?
Okay. I'll go here, I guess. In 1992, I was using alcohol and drugs fairly regularly, and I was in a long-term relationship, and that relationship resolved in about right around 2000. And on December 6th of 2000, I got clean and sober. That's the last day that I used. So I went into the rooms of 12-step programs, and they were talking about finding a higher power, and that for me to be clean and sober, I had to do blah blah blah. And I'm going like, everybody's going to be clean and sober. There's no fucking way. I mean, I can't delete the fucking, but I said, I can't do this. I can't, this is way too much like religion, is way too much like Christianity. They talk about finding a higher power to your understanding. Wink, wink, we're really telling you to be a Christian. And then it was like I'd go to meetings and people would actually tell me that maybe I was in the wrong recovery program or whatever. And then they used to do this Lord's Prayer thing in one of my home groups, and I would literally walk out, and they decided that they wanted me to stay at the end, so they started saying the Serenity Prayer. Took 10 years for them to change, but they changed. I've been clean sober a little while. And now they say that the reason they started saying the Serenity Prayer rather than the Lord's Prayer most of the time is because of me. And then I was just someplace the other night and something really tragic had happened to somebody. And I spoke up about how things work for me. And I'm trying to be very vague here, intentionally. And at the close of that, I said, my wish for you here, my spell for you, is I want you to have the best possible outcome. And I don't know what that means for you or your family or any of that, but here that I am with you in this, but I want you to have the best possible outcome. And then like three people after the meeting came up, well, two people came up to me and actually invited her the day she didn't show up and said, do you practice? And I said, yes, you can, this is my name, this is who I am, we have pagans in the park, this is somebody, this is Mrs. D, she knows who I am, she has my contact information. So it's been a, for me, part of my recovery from alcohol and drugs has been finding a higher power by understanding that's not Christian by any church imagination. I've literally had people yell and scream at me in meetings. I'm not exaggerating. I mean, just freaking meltdown right in front of me, and I'm going like, this is not what recovery is supposed to be about. Don't let it. And through that, and being me, I can be very assertive, but very almost. But in this sense, I just stand my ground, and it's saved my life. I mean, it's through every tragedy, and just because I got clean and sober doesn't mean that life on life terms. It didn't mean people didn't die or unfortunate things happened in my life, but it gave me a root source to go back. The groups that I practiced with were supportive. They understood my, to the best of their ability, and my spirituality, and I've celebrated births, deaths, weddings, and fastings, and I've had people come up to me at times and say, a really good friend of mine actually says to me, I know that this paganism is really interesting to you, it's a lot of fun, but you know, you're going to outgrow this. And I said, I'm not. I mean, it's like, this is so incorporated into the who I am. I mean, we celebrate the season where my family of choice gets together, we feast together, when somebody dies, we get together and we celebrate their lives and we release their spirit. When people get married, we celebrate that. There's not a better word, but when babies are born, we bless them, you know. We carry our traditions, mainly through an oral tradition, but there are some written traditions, but we carry, this is why this energy is so important to me, because most of our traditions are oral. And we carry our traditions oral, through oral traditions, and if people don't share, they lose that, so that having that community, I can't imagine. Outside of some really fucked up Christian stuff, I've never experienced this level of commitment to a spiritual path. Like I said, I'm not the best pagan. There's people out there eating vegan and they're recycling every day, and I don't know. And I did mine through social activism more than anything else. And my life is my job. Everything I've ever done. It's just recently that I actually got a decent job, but I even have taken jobs due to my spiritual belief system saying, this is where I need to be. I don't know what's telling me this, but this is the place I need to be in, and this is the place I will. And I have lived in poverty. I mean, not a conscious choice, but I mean, but because of that, I made different choices in my life. And again, you know, there's some loss there with the alcohol and drug use, you know, and stuff, and maybe seeking false ways to connect, but everybody has their own path. But this is so incorporated into who I am as a person. And by living my life the way I've lived it, I dragged my family along. I mean, kicking and screaming, and they know my wishes when I pass. They know if I was to get married, how that would look out. You know, I've taken people who were in really difficult situations and done particular rituals because they couldn't get out of the place that they were in, this ugly place that they were, and they came to me seeking something that other traditions were. So I can't answer. I don't know how to answer that question. I guess I'm done.
Are you a member of a coven?
No, I am not.
Practicing. And what do you see as the pros and cons of solitary worship?
Well, I'm not really practicing solitary because I'm practicing with pagans in the park, which isn't a coven.
It's a group.
It's a group. It's a spiritual group. I do spiritual practice. Of course, the pros of it are always I get to do things my way. And I can do my rituals any way I want to. And if I mess up, there's nobody around. And if I want to dance around naked, I can, you know. Or if I don't want to dress, or if I don't want to do a formal ritual, I can write something on a piece of paper and I can just burn it and put my wishes into the universe. It's all about how, when you're solitary, how you want to do it, you know. And when you're starting to work with a group, oh my God. When you start to work with a group, there's a push me pull you, and people want to do this and this, and I'm right now in the middle of that, and that's one of the reasons I swear to God I would never do what I'm doing. And you pull people together, and the cool thing is, like, you get to watch people develop and learn their practice, and you get to support others, you get to know that you're not alone. There's also, I think there's something about adding the cumulative energy during a ritual. I don't think it has to be black and white. Even if you were practicing, let's say as a Christian, in your daily life, you have individual rituals that you do. Like, my sister has a master's degree in Christian ministry. I know that she has prayers that she says every morning. I know that she reads her daily devotions. I know that she does all of these things. I do something very similar, but I don't call it Christianity. I do something very different. But you get that private time, that moment with yourself to be reflective and meditative, and you don't have to, at that moment, really pay attention to the needs of other people. And it's kind of selfish. It's about you. So I think I'm not solitary. I don't care about, but I do have things I do by myself. I can go out to a creek. I can pick up a handful of stones and say, "Guy, I can put my intent or whatever my intent, and I can cast that into running water, and that intent gets carried to wherever it needs to go." It's not fancy. I don't have to have 20 people around me. I just get to walk out to the creek and throw a bunch of... And nobody knows what I'm doing. So I think there's a lot of pros and cons. I love being involved in a group. It's a lot more work. It's a lot of work. I mean, praise an example. Just like we were going to have this huge week, we had this great plan of having this cookout for Lilith. And we're all going to cook our food. And then the floods and the water and whatever, we all knew that wasn't going to work. So at the last minute, we're trying to figure out trying to get 20 people to put together how we're going to fix that. And everybody was going in 10 different directions. And then finally, I said, just bring food. I don't care what it is, just bring food. And that worked out. But it was like, well, we're going to put pop tents up, or we're going to have somebody standing out in the rain turning hamburgers for us. No, that's not. Just trying to problem solve can be a real issue when you really. But also, on the other hand, you don't have that collective resource. If you're trying to figure something out by yourself and you don't have somebody else there to kind of crowdsource.
Yep.
So there's pros and cons to both of that. So.
Were you raised in a particular religious tradition?
Either Presbyterian or Methodist, went back and forth. I don't know, ask me. But I was raised basically as a Methodist. And my family wasn't you know, we were like show up on Sunday for Easter and Christmas, you know, type family.
Growing up, how aware were you of other faith traditions?
You know, I really wasn't at all, but this is so corny, it's stupid, but maybe it will be fun in your paper. One time I was watching Star Trek, and there's this episode about Apollo, and it's kind of a sad episode, and Apollo has to die, basically, and dissipate through the universe. And I remember turning around to my sister going like, well, what if I wanted to worship Apollo? She goes, well, my sister's kind of supportive. Her name's Gladys. She goes, well, Milton, you could worship Apollo if you wanted to, but people might think you're a little strange. And she gave me, and from that on, she gave me permission to do whatever I want. She said, people are just going to think you're a little odd. And I love that.
Yeah. Today, how would you rate your knowledge of other religions? Have you studied much about world religions?
No, I would say, other than taking the normal college courses and, you know, reading the Bible, but no, outside of no way would I consider myself anywhere near knowledgeable about other religions. I mean, I certainly take an interest and I read up on them, but I would say I know more than probably the average person, but I certainly know hundreds of that people are far more knowledgeable about them than I ever will be, because I won't put the energy into doing that.
And after the men's festival, were there other experiences, books, or people that influenced you to really follow this path?
Yeah, there was a woman at my place of employment. She was a future place of employment, let's say that. But there was a woman who I knew worked in a mental health center, and she used to have these group meetings, and I used to go. She wasn't a Covenant, but she used to celebrate the Sabbath. It's like. So I used to go over there. I'm not sure if I should use her name or not, but she's fairly well known in the peak. It's all the same. It's Oma Lacey. But she used to have this group that I used to go to for on a fairly regular basis. And then for a little while, I was traveling kind of like... I was going to Oklahoma, basically, and I was going to some other places just to... celebrate various Sabbaths and get a very tradition, but I'm not as well connected to the pagan community as other people who I know go to all sorts of events throughout the year. But you know, before all that, you know, I mean, there certainly was an awareness of something greater than myself. And one of my great, well, I won't go into all the details, but I was in the Grand Canyon. I was hiking and I was with my partner at the time, and this is the difference between the two of us, and we got caught in this torrential thunderstorm, basically a flash flood, and I thought we were going to die. I mean, it was intense. So his solution to the problem was to set the tent up and literally roll boulders into the tent to hold the tent up so it wouldn't blow away. And I thought, well, you go ahead and do that. But we were someplace called Indian Gardens in the Grand Canyon. It's fairly well known. But there was a picnic table there. And I said, so I took all my clothes off down to my underwear. And I put them in a ball and I put them in the tent. And I said, I'm just going to sit here and let this happen. And it was like trains clashing. And it was a loud thing. And it was just echoing off the walls. And I just let go at that moment. And I said, now this is the most amazing, total, like, incredible experience in my life. And I was just open to it. And then... as fast as the storm came on, it went away, and then I went back into the tent to dry off or whatever and get dressed. There's something called moonflowers that bloom after a rainstorm, but they're delicacies for deer and stuff. So literally I was sitting there in the tent getting dressed, and this fawn and doe came up to moonflowers, which were literally blooming. They were literally blooming in front of me, and they were just picking the blooms off as they bust open, and I just sat there, and I knew from that moment that I would never be in the traditional religious past ever again, and that's before 1992. When was I hiking the Grand Canyon? Oh, it doesn't matter. A long time ago. But that was amazing. Just had this incredible thunderstorm, and then and just to sit there and let it happen, because there's nothing that I was going to do that's going to ever impact that. And then, you know, when I'm getting dressed to have this out of this what was incredibly chaotic and very destructive, is to watch this flower as a big bush bloom, and my partner and I just sat there. We didn't move, and I could literally have reached out the tent and had touched it. I didn't even know that what these flowers were. I didn't even know that they bloomed. We just set the tent up there, or he did, I should say. So I didn't even know that they bloomed. I thought they were just some type of, and then all of a sudden, so I asked people, going like, what are these things? And you see them in people's yards. They're like weeds, but yeah, they're cool. So.
Nice. Why do you think people are attracted to paganism?
I think they've been burned by traditional religious beliefs. I mean, currently I'm kind of focused on this, my social activism, I guess, but when you know what your religious text says and you're doing the direct opposite of it, that causes cognitive dissonance. People have somehow in their head have to make sense out of that. And change comes from cognitive dissonance. When you see something and it's not congruent with your reality, you either confabulate or you change or you do something, or you end up making up a reality, and that's how you end up with a lot of mental illnesses. People. So you have this cognitive, I think if people are coming to terms with this cognitive dissonance, I mean, I'm very liberal in my beliefs, but I don't want to pick on anybody, but you have a president who says he's a Christian, who was having sex with a paid prostitute, essentially, while his wife was in the hospital with their baby, and the religious leaders of our times are saying that he's the most spiritual person and he's going to guide us to the spiritual utopia, and people are going like, that's inconsistent, that's a cognitive dissonance again. It's like, that doesn't make any sense to me. So I think people come seeking paganism because of cognitive dissonance. They see the way the world is, and then they see the religion that they're following, and it's not making sense to them. And I can tell you, not everybody sticks around with paganism. And it draws from the fringes of society at times. It's becoming more mainstream, but you can get some pretty odd characters showing up at rituals. That's why you have people like me called the Dragon, who kind of walk around to make sure that people, because I've seen some pretty strange stuff, and people have showed up that otherwise should not have been there for a lot of reasons. Stop picking on anybody.
Have you had to, like, kick people out of rituals?
I haven't ever kicked anybody out of a ritual. I'll just say there was a sex offender or something. And, you know, I just had to be very kind of clear that this wasn't a place for, I mean, I didn't tell him this, but this isn't a place for predators. You're more than welcome to come and practice with us, but this isn't a place you're going to be allowed to pick up your next victim, because what I'm involved in right now is very friendly. People bring their grandbabies and their children, and we got people who are pregnant, and, you know, I mean, I haven't ever personally had to kick anybody out of a ritual, but I've had to set some like boundaries. It's like, even at Pagans in the Park, you know, I don't drink, so I set the ritual around no alcohol use, you know. I mean, it's like And then, you know, we've been at rituals, and this is why the Lavender Circle dissipated. Bert was out of Shawnee Lake, and we had not rented the shelter house. We had rented the space outside. It's kind of strange how they do that. And we were doing our thing, and these people came up to us and just started screaming at us, how dare we interrupt their wedding? And we're trying to be very calm and go like, and this is, we've had the space rented. We're not trying to disrespect you, but you have to have somebody kind of, I'm not always that person, not that kind. It was Bert who was that person. Have to go up to people and go like, we're not here to, we'll leave. I mean, we're not here to hurt you or to disrespect you. If you're upset, we are sorry and we will leave the space. And they're all the time kind of cursing and yelling. I mean, literally yelling at us. And we're going, we're all getting in our cars and leaving. And you're going, like, but you had to have somebody there to say, and not everybody, because people get, you know, people want to get macho. Or get, no, guys. We will leave. Go. We're okay with that. And then, you know, that particular experience, I know that Bert, after that, stopped doing Lavender, doing the Lavender Circles, and a couple of other people won't come to public rituals anymore because they can be private. So that type of stuff, you know. And then, I don't know, because Pagans in the Park, you know, like somebody is currently practicing a branch of voodoo in Pagans in the Park, and then you have to play the teacher. You have to teach them what that means, because people think necromancy, that's part of Buddhism, but it's such a small part of that, even though it is a part of that. And so, yes, that type of stuff. It's when you bring all these eclectic people who really don't even for themselves have a good idea of what they're doing, and then you have to say, you know, this is a safe space for everybody, but we need to honor everyone, and holding that space for people and making it safe so everybody feels welcome and can be challenging at times.
How many people are involved in Pagans in the Park, and how many show up for rituals?
Right now we've got about a core 25. We've had up to, I think, 30 or 50. People come and go. There's about four or five of us, like Gene, I, really are the core as far as making sure things get rented, things get set up. But there's like two other people, you know, that kind of add to that. And I've kind of started inviting people, because like the first two rituals, I basically, Jeannie and I, not me personally, Jeannie and I kind of developed and we put together. And then I started reaching out and starting to ask other people to take a more active role. And that's exactly what I want them to do. So that's growing. It's kind of limited right now. And some people like are inexperienced and they just need some guiding. But we have a probably solid, I'm going to say, and you check with other people too, I'm going to say we have a solid 25 to 30 people going to Pagans in the Park right now. And I don't do a head count or anything. Basically how I count that is I rent the shelter house and I ask for like a $2 to $3 donation, and then basically I figure out, well, if I make $56 for the shelter house, that means 25 people show up. And people are tossing $2 in, you know, that's how I kind of count.
And does Pagans in the Park do like educational programs or anything other than just hosting rituals?
Just hosting rituals at this point. And I don't see us doing that in the future either. Mm-hmm.
How much planning goes into each ritual?
These are pretty, I don't know, we spend maybe 10 hours tops if we spend that much. Probably about, and it's all online. I mean, sometimes we get together for coffee, but it's no more than 10 hours. But I don't know what the people who are currently priestess or priest, how much of their individual time that they're spending on it, mm-hmm. how much, and you'd have to ask each person because that's individual to the person. Like, I know, God, I'm spacing her name right now. I know that she's going to be, the high priestess next time is going to be She's going to have 18 participants.
Wow.
And I'm one of them, so she's going to have to put a lot of energy into that, but it won't be me. As far as me, I'm done, to tell you the truth. I mean, I rented the shelter house. I paid the fees. The space is available. I'm going to be a participant. That didn't even take me two hours. I mean, so, but the people who are actually going to be facilitating that, I don't know how much time they put into that.
And how do you determine who leads each ritual?
I just ask.
So just volunteers, yeah. And then they take it upon themselves to write a ritual?
Yeah.
And do you guys create new spells and rituals, or do you have traditional scripts you always use?
It depends on who's leading. And there's no... I know that gnat needs to die. Sorry.
Do you have a favorite ritual or ballot?
I have a ritual that I do that's for my own personal space, and I haven't really taken it into a public area. But yeah, there's this one ritual that I do, and my favorite would be Maven and the Somersault. The Somersault is sort of my favorite. I like Halloween, but a lot, at least in Midwestern Kansas, a lot of that has gotten to be, it's pretty heavy. It has to do with a lot of grieving and loss and honoring ancestors. And I love those rituals. And I always walk away feeling fulfilled, but they're sad. And then Yule has too much of a Christmassy type feel to it. But like the Summer Solstice and Maven are really detached from any traditional. Like even Luganos or Lammas is the Christians, it's just the mass of the first loaf, where in Ireland and England they actually celebrate, bring small loaves of bread to honor the crops. So I like the rituals that are more detached, like even Estara or Estara. I like that, but it also is so connected to traditional Christian beliefs. But Beltane, people infuse so much sexual energy and that makes me uncomfortable. So I go with Lilith and I go with Maven are my favorite.
Overall, how would you describe the pagan community in Topeka and the surrounding areas?
Very eclectic, very loose, very closeted. I'm trying to change that, obviously, by making a public space available. I'm skittish, maybe too big for this paper, but there's been a lot of what we call witch wars over the years, which is just basically infighting and people just bickering about. They get caught up, and this is how we do things, and if you do it this way, then it's not going to work. Or, I don't know. Pagans in the Park has avoided that infighting so far.
Is there a large community here, or is it mostly the people who show up to Pagans in the Park represents most of it?
No, it's so positive. You would be surprised. Camp Guy is a good place to represent that. You go to Heartland in May, and you see 2,000 people on campus. I mean, I don't go, but I mean,
it's big.
It's huge. I mean, we've only barely touched what's there. I talk to people all the time who are in the Green Closet. I mean, all the time. They're not coming out. Like Oma Lacey was really big at one point, doing a lot of different stuff, and she just got tired, And then there's a lot of energy when you're trying to start something new and trying to get people to come, and you get a low turnout or whatever, and people get frustrated, and there's a larger contingency, but people just are like. So even like a Midwest Men's Festival, hundreds of men show up to that. I mean, well, it used to be, I think it's smaller now. And you know that most of those people who are showing up to Westminster are practicing. And you know, but you don't, people are, I mean, and then of course, I mean, even being in a coffee shop and me speaking publicly, you know, say, you say witchcraft, you know, or if I'm even in my recovery stuff and I say I'm a practicing witch, you can see the room. Or like, yeah, the part, you know, like, so. It's huge, and
is there active discrimination that you've seen?
Yes and no. I mean, it depends on the people. You know, for the most part, I faced it myself. So, when you say active, I will disagree with that. Is it hidden? Is it passive? Is it yeah, it's there. I've experienced it myself, and I was caught off guard because I thought this was such an opening, and to find out that all this was happening, and I became aware of it in a very subtle way, and it was directed towards me, and I was like, wow, you know, I was blindsided by it, and then it's so secretive. I mean, it's really super secretive, and so when you start talking to people about it, it's like, well, is this in your head? Or are you just overreacting? No, and then when you get in some of the Nordic cults, not all, but some of those Nordic cults can get pretty white supremacists. I mean, and that's the ugly truth about who we are. And the diagnostic cults, you want to talk about androgyny, that's what that's called, where it's pure out hate for men. I've actually had people with diagnostic cults threaten to castrate me. Or like a transgender person was trying to show up for the goddess gathering out of Gaia and had not made the transition, and they effectively banned her because she still had a penis. I've seen it, and it's ugly. But when you talk to people, they were like, no, it's there. And when it happened to me, I was even unaware of it.
Yeah.
And then some stuff happened, and I was like, "What? How was I blind to that?" And
so it's happening both within and from outside the community.
Oh yeah, it's a lot from inside. I mean, you expect a pushback from society at large. You don't expect your brethren to like when they actually banned the transgender person from the Dallas gathering because she had not transitioned. When she finally transitioned, they let her attend. But while she was making the transition, she wasn't allowed. I mean, how is that? I don't know. It blew my mind. And I can tell you exactly who that person was off tape. It was like, I was like, You know what I mean? And then, like I said, some of the Nordic cults, you know, the Odin cults, especially in the prison systems, get downright ugly. I'm not saying everybody's that way. That's not never intended that way. The Nordic culture was very embracing and very open, but for people to take that like any other branch of religion or spirituality and twist it to their own use. It was never intended that way. And I could point you to people who would say, yeah, that happens, but that's not what I'm about. But that doesn't change the fact that it's happening.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever felt the need to hide your own beliefs?
No, I'm too much me. I'm too much me.
How does food figure into your religious practice?
It really doesn't. I mean, I would like to say it does, but it doesn't. Where I'm frustrated with myself is I'm obviously obese, and I do believe that we only should take what we need, and no more. And obviously I overeat, and obviously I consume more food than I need. But other than that, it really doesn't. I mean, but if you talk about food in general, it doesn't. So if you talk about the practice of sharing meals or breaking bread or feasting, I've had rituals specifically centered around the Viking log houses, where people would actually sit and there would be an empty chair, and then you would put food on the chair and you would actually have a meal, and you would honor people who had passed, and you would, and I've actually had meals which there's a great ritual. It's born out of the Jewish tradition, but pagans have copied it. It's called are you familiar with the myth of stone soup?
Mm-hmm.
So we literally pull up a pot, put a big stone in it, have everybody bring vegetables, and then make a soup from that. And then, so the act of eating or breaking bread or feasting is a huge part of my spiritual beliefs. Gigantic. But as far as, am I vegan, vegan, carnivore, it doesn't, but... We're coming together to put together a meal that other people can share. Incredibly important. It's one of the best part of ritual for me is the feast.
Do you guys have any rules regarding matters of dress or style or behavior codes at rituals?
Well, Pagans in the Park in particular, there's a list of park rules that we have to obey. And then there's the city codes. Like, for example, you can't show up mute to a ritual, okay? So we don't have any formal... I mean, we don't have any formal rules than the rules that already exist. Now, someone came in wearing a shirt saying, "Fuck the police." I might go up to them as the dragon and go like, "Is this something we really..." And then, because then you end up into this horrible debate, you know, so you really want to be careful about that, but there's no formal rules other than we're using this space and these are the rules that we have to adhere by, and if you can't adhere to the rules of the city and state codes and the park rules, then you're not welcome here, because that then you take the space away from everybody. And if they want to get in a fight over that, we just pick up our stuff and leave. I mean, we have to obey those rules.
Nice. Have you ever thought about leaving the group?
Well, I just started this, and not right now. Well, I have to say, with it, basically its inception as the Lavender Circle and Sophia's Garden and Pagans in the Park and Pagan Pride Day, there at times I've been very frustrated with it. When the wedding party at the Shawnee Lake came up and just started screaming at us, I mean, you know, you're going like, and I seriously thought about it. And then the most recent, I guess, I guess I kind of blocked this out a little bit, but this is kind of sad, but we were at our second ritual for Pagans in the Park in this manifestation of Pagans in the Park. During Yule, one of the participants got up and she went to the bathroom and she had a grandbaby there, and she called 911 and she collapsed. And I was smudging people at the time, and fire trucks pulled up. So I thought, I went out and saw the fire trucks, and I thought I set off some type of alarm. So I walked up there, and I'm kind of dressed odd. I have a headband on, and I've got an Ablodian shell, and I smell like smudge, which smells like pot. And I'm going, so, and I'm not drunk or anything, but they're going like, "Who is it?" I said, "Hey, I have a bunch of people. If I set off alarm, everything's okay. There's no fire." She goes, "No." Someone in the bathroom, her name says she's collapsed. So I went up there with them. One of the paramedics actually fell on the way, but I went up there, and they got in there and said she had COVID. And I know what that means for my own professional life. But anyway, so I went back and got Jeannie, and I said, she's coded. And Jeannie goes, what do you mean? I said, she's dead. And she goes, they're doing CPR on her right now. And I'm going, yeah, Jeannie, she's fucking dead. I'm going like, I'm sorry, I shouldn't use the F word so much. But they got her to the hospital. She never woke up, and she was brain dead, and the family had to make decisions, or end-of-life decisions that night. And her grandbaby was there, and we had to make arrangements for the grandbaby to get picked up and taken home. And I was like, we're never doing this again. I said, I can't do this. And then the group reached out to me and said, so-and-so wants to lead the ritual. Will you rent the space? And I said, okay, we're off and running. But that was the closest I ever came to it's like totally walking away from this whole path I was going like. And then, you know, we had to end the ritual too. And I even walked in and said, and we're trying to keep the grandbaby kind of off to the side. And we're kind of going like, guys, Sage's dead. You know, I mean, quite say it that way. Do you want to continue with the ritual? And they said, yeah, sure. And some people didn't even know what happened. And people were there. I mean, it was such a large group that people didn't even know who Sage was. And I was out of my rhythm, and I was like, but when the group itself, they probably don't see it that way, but when the group reached out to me and said, we want to continue, that was a huge commitment on their part. So, me just kind of being a vessel saying, okay, I'll set it up for you guys.
How do you see the future of the group? Is it growing and changing?
I'll wait till Maven to see where we're at. That'll be actually the first complete year. We did our first 4 set of rituals, but this will be the second one. Right now, it's not growing, and that's my concern. I'm trying to get people to come and let people know that it's there and it's available. But again, people are skittish for good reasons. I mean, when you've had to deal with witch wars and you've had to deal with the community and you've had to deal with the infighting, people get battle weary. I mean, they just get tired. You know, it's easier to practice solitary than to have to put up with all this. And then it's like the big battle is, well, why do we have to pay for space, and why can't we do this in somebody's backyard and all that stuff? And that used to be a huge fight in the community. And I'm the one who finally said, I'll rent a shelter house, I'll pay the money, you guys reimburse me, and I'll set the schedule. I mean, it's rude, but that's the way it is. And you'd be surprised how much. And then people still want to fight about that. Well, why can't we have these park times? No, it's not that way. This is the park. These are the rules. Follow it. And that kind of keeps people in line, but it's like, the people just have to, I mean, as inconvenient, but as powerful, I like having, people just have to deal with the structure of what we have available. And I'm not saying this, and then either me or someone else who's willing to step up and say, okay, we'll pay for the shelter house and take that financial risk, you know, it's not all. And say, but if I wasn't doing that, I could tell you right now, Pegasus in the Park wouldn't be happening.
What have been the best and worst things about being involved with the local pagan community?
The witch wars, people just the fighting. You're not doing it right, this person's doing that. Or sometimes you go into circles and this person's sleeping with that person and the person has to be married, and you go like, come on guys, we're supposed to be better than this. But it's nothing other than it doesn't make it right or wrong that you don't see in other places, but you know, my attitude is we're supposed to be better than this. And then we're not going to eat it. No, I felt like I thought that I was personally attacked for something that happened, and I was like, but I'm the kind of guy like I said, this is why Pegasus in the Park happened. I just said, if you feel that way towards me, you truly believe that I'm that person, I don't want to be the source of your misery. I will go and do something somewhere else and have a more positive experience. But, you know, sometimes the personal attacks are not fun.
And the positive thing?
The positive thing is I found a path that allows me to stay clean and sober, that allows me to celebrate life, that allows me to honor my ancestors, that allows me to recognize that the wheel is turning. It, because I choose to be involved in it, it forces me to take 8 days out of my life every year and look where I'm at and to evaluate that and to truly spend time working on me and defining who I want to be as a human and how I can become better as a human and what it means to be human and what I can contribute to humanity and what it means to have this wonderful relationships like around Samhain and then honor those people when they pass, you know, and not just forget them, but actually set a day aside and say, I miss you, you know, just like, and then to do that collectively with people. We used to do something called, well, I call it the wailing, but anyway, we used to sit around and we would just wail, just let our grief go and share that moment of, you know, loss, but also realize that life goes on and, you know, like I said, it's been incorporated. I celebrate births, marriages, babies being born, people getting married, and even the dissolution of relationships can be honored when they needed to be. One of the most powerful things for me as a pagan is the kind of the year and a day of that people take. It's like I will do my best with everything I can within this year. And if it doesn't work out, then things can change. But I think if other people entered their respective lives and said, this is a year and a day, we will try to make everything we want. At the year and a day, when that ends, we come together and we have a conversation. But even having that principle on my life, and that's how I treat my clean time of sobriety as a year and a day. It's like every Yule, I make an oath to stay clean and sober for a year. I thought on December 6th, I reevaluate that. And I just wish other people, I don't know if they do or don't, but I know a lot of pagans do, is that they make that year and a day of whatever situation I'm in, is it working for me? Is it functioning? Is it the way I want it to be? And then if it's not, because of the way I believe, then I need to change something. And I think a lot of people would be more happy in their lives and would be less stuck. And I think the relationships would be a lot less chaotic. But just that pause. Every eight days out of the year, I take, and each Sabbath has a different meaning to me. So I specifically look at one aspect of my life. Like Maven's coming up for Pagans in the Park. Specifically, that's about harvest and abundance. And there's other things that go along with that. So let me celebrate what's in my life and what I want and the gratitude for that and what that brings. And let me really think about that. And then part of, because it's a harvest festival, how do I keep hold of that? What do I need to preserve to make that happen again next year? And if for some reason this particular thing didn't work, then let's let the soil rest, let it go fallow for a year and maybe not plant anything there. And those types of metaphors and stuff, but like, you know, when you talk about Yule, you talk about the light dimming. So what meaning and power can we find in the dark? What about that shadow self? What about that piece of ourself? And when the sun rises, what do we want to take from that dark place? And every year, I mean, each Sabbath has a different meaning. And so I like the power that causes me to pause and to reflect.
All right. And final question. What do you wish more people understood about paganism?
I wish more people understood that it's really, for me and for most of the people I associate with, it's really just about watching the wheel turn or the cycle of life. It doesn't have all the negative connotations of Satanism or human sacrifice. Santa Maria does sacrifice chickens. Some of the Nordic Pass, they do sacrifice goats. So it's hard. There's a long story about that one. I'll tell you one of these days. Winter. They took a goat out to Gaia, and it was going to be sacrificed. And they had this poor goat in this cage all the time, and it wasn't well fed. It wasn't well taken care of, and they knew that the sacrifice was going to take place. And by the time the goat got there, the goat was like all like sick and not well or anything. And so they went ahead and they sacrificed the goat. But anyway, but they found the guy and said, "You're never doing this ever again." I mean, there's a way to do that and be honorary, but what they did to this poor goat, I mean, that guy was like, everybody was like, "You did what?" We can't believe. See, it's stuff like that. It's like, you don't, people want to focus on that stuff. Wow. But the positive stuff is, even though I talk about discrimination within the groups and stuff, and it does happen, it can be a safe place. You just need, if you can, and this, you can't always in a public setting, but if you can find a close group of people with who are like-minded, then your healing can be your recovery from whatever horrible stuff has happened in your life, and you can move forward. You know, the teaching kind of like honoring your ancestors, learning what they had to offer, the sacrifices that they made, you know. The truth of that fact is that we do live on a planet and that it is finite, and celebrating that and honoring that and wanting that to be a safe place for the other generations to grow up in, that you don't have to be, this gets into real hardcore paganism when you talk about some of the positive stuff. I don't have to be afraid of my sexuality. I don't have to be afraid of sex. I don't have to be afraid of my body. I don't have to be afraid of the negative thoughts or the shadow that exists in me. Paganism teaches me to live with that. I don't. The natural human urges that we have or desires, there's nothing wrong with that. But learning to honor those and to do those in a way that are respectful of others. I think paganism does a lot of that. It's learning is how to interact with people, other people, in a respectful, meaningful way. I mean, people being shamed for who they are, or then there's this idea of egalitarianism and paganism for the most part, outside of some of the more what I'm going to call the extreme ends of it, where everybody's equal, everybody has the same amount of power. Yeah, there are people in groups who go on power trips, and we don't want to get that, but that sense of that you lose the pretense that one person is better than another because of the color of their skin, their sexuality, their gender, their sex, that everybody has worth. And when things happen in the pagan community at large, and that's threatened, I speak about it. It's like, I will never shut up about the goddess gathering banning a transgender woman because she had not transitioned. That should never happen. Never, 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 never fucking happen. And then only when she cut off her, when she went through the sex reassignment change, were they willing to accept her as a woman. That's bullshit. And I think paganism gives me that voice to say, what you did was wrong. And you may disagree with me, but we don't have to come to blows over, but what you did was wrong. So I think and paganism gives me that voice. I am sorry for those who are in the broom closet and don't feel that they can't. But again, I've been very, like I said at the beginning, I've been very selective about, I won't say very selective, that's not a fair way to say that. I've been put in jobs and positions and careers that I've been fortunate where it hasn't mattered. Now, could that change tomorrow? Could I lose my job and get into a really anti-pagan, because I need to put food on the table? Yes, that could happen. But for the most part, I've been really lucky that I've been able to speak my voice. And I think that's what paganism gives to people, is that voice to say, there's not one way to spirituality or one path. That there's multiple ways, and somehow we can come together and as a person figure out what that means, as one group, as one collective conscience, so that we as a species can evolve and become better. And the other thing that's really positive about paganism, because I have so many problems, it recognizes that there is a dark side. It brings it out. I mean, some of the rituals bring it out and put it on display. And due to that, we learn to live with it. We learn to adapt. We don't let it consume us. We don't let it eat us. And other religions spend so much time suppressing that and hiding it, or trying to stick that in a corner. Priesthood in the Catholic Church is one of those things that I think about. And if people were just allowed to acknowledge and recognize those things about us, and there's nothing wrong with anger when it helps me survive. There's nothing wrong with being fearful, because fear keeps me from being hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that about paganism, is that we're not afraid to look at those things and honestly say they're part of us. And ritual helps us develop a way in which to make those a meaningful part of ourselves. Jung talked a lot about animus and anime, and talked a lot about the shadow, and we have to find a balance there. And I think paganism allows us to do that. I've been in rituals and where Kali was invoked, and Kali's a really scary deity, but we didn't shy away from that, because I don't know, people listening, Kali bursts worlds and she destroys worlds. So part of what you're doing is deconstructing, one other part is you're creating, and you have this chaos magic in between. And I think that's where our society is. We're in this place where a lot of chaos is happening, chaos magic. And I hope our society can come together and say, okay, we've ripped the scab off of this ugliness of our society. Trump has done us a favor. Wow. We see this horrible, pus-ridden thing. How do we cleanse that wound? Rather than just putting a band-aid on it, how do we heal? How do we get that infection taken care of? And paganism is very good about that. It's very good about ripping the scab off and saying, let's just not put a bandage on this. Let's figure out. And the traditions of the midwife and the women who practice healing all come from that place of like, we're just not going to look at this. We're actually going to try to heal the men and try to fix this. And that's the best thing about paganism, is it's not afraid to look at that stuff and take steps to correct it. Now, there's some negative things to say about that too, but that's where I'll leave that on a positive note.
All right. Anything else you want to add?
No, do you have any more for me?
I think we're good.
Okay, did that make any sense?
Yeah.
Okay.